And we move on to page 247. It has come up before. There's been an opportunity for further scrutiny, some minor changes. I'm comfortable with it. I'll leave it to you members to move as you wish. Councillor Telfer.
I'll so move.
Moving as printed. Seconded Councillor Hull.
We don't have any grievances here, Mr. Mayor.
Right this minute, perhaps. Councillor Telfer, did you wish to speak further? Councillor Hull?
No, not.
Said it all. No one against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we go forward to the playground framework workshop. So I'm after a motion that standing orders be suspended. Oh, Councillor Valeska has a question.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to move a motion that standing orders are suspended in order to finish this item.
Yes, that's in order. Is that seconded? Councillor Byram, all those in favour? All those against? No, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. So, it's a notion, well, it's a complex question about how much to provide in terms of playgrounds and how we do it. So I'm really a bit in your hands as to how to kick off the debate. I guess the first thing is, before we get to specific playgrounds, first of all, are people generally happy with the shade provisions that are in there? I know Councillor Valeska was the one that raised this issue originally, and it's certainly very popular with the community. Everyone seems comfortable with that. Then probably the big question is the general rule about playground provision, whether we're talking about 500 metres or 750 metres or whatever. So, Councillor Crossland, what do you think?
My word is slightly different, Your Worship. Is how I see it is the shade is a great example of something we do need. That's a given. But where I see it is we are on a bit of a train ride with higher and higher playground costs, better and better facilities. Originally, when we went down this track, I was of the belief, well, although we're providing better playgrounds in some areas, we're removing the small ones because the community had spoken that they got more pleasure and use out of bigger playgrounds than the little ones. But unfortunately, we're now on a little bit of a occasion where we're building the bigger ones, but we're also endorsing keeping the smaller ones. So the cost seems to be going up exponentially. I remember Councillor Hull, when we set off on this journey, council together, that some decisions will not always suit everybody in the community, but you have to have a bit of backbone and say no, and if we don't, then things will soon fall apart. And sadly, we started saying no on a number of occasions, so we're now funding multiple things, and I think that's really where we need to start. Do we want to see all these costs escalating and just keep giving everybody everything, or are we actually going to look at keeping the cost the same and coming up with a plan of either just keeping the small ones and stop upgrading them, or are we going to go back to the original plan of upgrading and having some nice playgrounds, bigger ones, get rid of the smaller ones? And I think that's really the debate we need.
All right, let's have a bit more discussion before testing the waters. Councillor Telfer?
Given that in the next 20 years we can predictably spend $35 million on playgrounds, and I don't know how this balances with other open space and other requirements throughout our city, I'm wondering whether we're getting to the point where we need a Section 48 on this, because Council can decide to have a Section 48, and if we're spending $3 million a year on playgrounds and then we have this ongoing commitment a long way out, we still have 40 more playgrounds to upgrade and we've got a whole other list of other ones that we want to put in, should we be actually looking this at this in terms of a Section 48, in terms of how it sits in our whole council perspective of resources?
That's a question which upon which staff might have a view. Got a view on the appropriateness of the Section 48, Mr. Mifsud?
Thank you. Through the Chair, certainly under the Section 48 of the legislation, Council has a discretion if it feels appropriate, providing it's not a specific exception. And I know that infrastructure works are specifically exempted, but certainly outside of those parameters, Council has the discretion if it chooses.
I suppose if you could just go on, Mr. Mifsud, how would a Section 48 appraisal assist Council coming to a decision?
Through the Chair, it would give Council fuller detail and information in regard to whole-of-life costs and the impact on your long-term financial planning and sustainability.
Don't we have that in the report anyway?
Yes. The Section 48 report just provides a lot more information than what you would get in this just standard report, a lot more information.
Thank you. Sort of going around the table, Councillor Hull, or then Councillor Gard.
Mr Mayor, Councillor Crosland's right. I do have a long-standing view on this, and it's a view that I've developed after being here a long time. I think it's a shame we don't have our smart cities technology up and going where we could actually detect the attendance of any specific playground. We don't have data, reliable data. But one thing I can tell you is that having visited the St Kilda playground only today, I meant my return from Clare with my family, I can tell you that the St Kilda playground was very well attended. Hundreds of kids and family members. The pub nearby must have done a good trade, and certainly the ice cream vendor. But this is an example of what I'm talking about. The days of the slippery dip and the swing, capturing your child's imagination is gone for any length of time until they actually get irritable and want to move on. You have to provide appropriate amenity. And as I said before, I can detect from the community and from time to time the media touches on this, that this generation expects better. We need to actually tune in. We need to tune in and not skimp on playground equipment. I'm not saying that for 1 minute. Not skimp. We're not talking about a cost saving here. We're talking about doing it better, more strategically, and having it more appreciated by the client group, being
so,
the kids.
So I'd ask Councillor Hull and others, sort of echoing Councillor Crossland's question, does that mean we have fewer playgrounds but higher standard and more complex, or do we cater for the mum or dad with a stroller and a toddler who goes to the local as well as the significant playground which attracts people from the region? You know what I mean? Do you have both, or do you tend, it's not absolute, but do you push the dial towards one or the other? So if I can just come in again, I'm just trying to be helpful here, but we were heading down a track with the report that came to Council, which I dare characterise as having more of the neighbourhood and regional, but also having no less, in fact more of the local three-piece playground as well. And we were factoring in tens of millions over the many years to do that. So do we keep going down that track, or it sounds like if we're going to cut out anything, it would be more at the local level and focus more on the neighbourhood and regional level, which would obviously cost less than the track. Well, it could cost less, or it could cost the same, but it would be a different approach. Now, Councillor Gard was next.
I don't think I've disagreed with anything said so far. It's just a matter of strategy and summary here. One of the things that does worry me about rationalising playground numbers in favour of making super playgrounds, if you like, is that they're not as accessible to certain age groups. I worry that our children are locked up and that they don't roam the streets the way that they used to, healthily. So research is needed not only on... We've been fairly clinical, and we've been, in a healthy way, we've been fairly clinical with measurement of distance and radius and juxtaposition of the three different grades of playground. And that's been an excellent exercise. We may need to come to grips more with the trends within families, having regard for the demographics of each location, because we know they shift over time. But just what the intentions and what the inclinations of families are in relation to playground use. What I'm trying to say is that I don't think we've gotten it wrong to do this overlay exercise, but I do feel it needs additional science if we are to plan better over the next 20 years. And that simply means that we can, at the moment, we can make an assumption that we've got I'll call them A, B and C, where C is the big one. The C playgrounds are in a location that certainly affect the number nearby of the B's and A's. But it's an oversimplification, I think, to say that that's what we do across the whole of the city of Marion because of the demographic shift and because of the fact that perhaps we don't know well enough how people or what families actually intend for their children. So that's the more substance as time... And I'm not criticising staff because I think the job to hand, the job to date has been exceptionally good. I hate to say the word again, but it is a marketing issue. It's determination of needs using market segmentations because there are several markets we're playing to here.
The reality is that, I believe that we're going to keep fighting these little battles as long as we don't pull this all together and have what I call a bit more of a marketing focus on, to quote a friend over here, marketing focus on what we're doing. It's really difficult to go to your community and say we're going to take away this local playground. Almost impossible, as we're finding out through a couple of the playgrounds we've tried to do. You need to provide some sort of carrot. There needs to be something else in the arrangement where you say, look, we're going to take away this playground and this playground, but we're going to build this playground here to compensate. And I think that probably that overarching view is what we're missing, that kind of argument that the councillors and even the members of the staff can go to the community and say, yes, we're going to take away this small playground. And the reason is because we're going to build this other playground, and that's our intent, right? Our intent is to upgrade this playground or do this other playground. But I think at the moment those two sort of systems are not joined to each other. It appears to our community that we're just taking out these playgrounds and then somewhere else that one gets upgraded. I don't know how they join to each other. Whereas I think if you can actually make an argument to say, look, we're going to take, I'll use, let's say Louise and Oliphant. We're going to take Louise and Oliphant away and we're going to do something at Dwyer Road. And then at least everybody's got an idea of what the picture of the community is going to look like. It's much harder for someone to say, oh, I don't want you to do that. I think it depends entirely on what you've got available. I mean, like, but I mean, like, well, we had a chat tonight about Louise Avenue, and there's not a space there where we can easily grab a large block of land to do a regional play space. So the argument there is much more complicated than something like a Hendry Street, where you'd say, we've got this big space, we're going to do this big playground, so maybe there's a couple of smaller ones that we can lose there. Yeah, and it's never, we're never going to get anywhere if we haggle on everything, as we know.
Okay. The most basic principle, I think, is one that we seem to agree on at one stage, that every household, where possible, should be able to reach a playground, or I would say at least a reserve with a couple of seats on it, so within 400 metres. 400 metres, I think. Is that the latest figure? 400? 500? No, the real latest figure. I can't remember now. Anyway, but the point is that minimum figure, we should have at least a playground or a space where people can play or walk and rest, so a couple of seats at least. After that, I have to agree with the idea of that we do seem to need a bit more research, I think, or analysis of the figures that we've got or the information we've got, and to try to arrive at fairly conclusively where we think a park should be and where it shouldn't. And now comes the other point that's been raised tonight about basically the demand for a small park. Now, if we don't have demand, like that is a piece of research that we definitely have to do. I don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but we need to try to really involve a lot of community people to see if they really are going to be using smaller playgrounds, and if they're really not, we'll just have them as reserves. But we right? Yes. Yes. One of the refinements, may I just say, and I think this will be my last point, is that the 400 metre or whatever distance we finally agree again can be to a, doesn't matter what it is, it's a small park, one of the large parks, doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's a or a reserve, as long as it's somewhere where a family can go and play that's not at their home, and they can walk there. So that's it. So it doesn't really matter if it's one of the large ones, one of the small ones. Certainly don't want to see a whole lot of small ones in the umbrella of the next grade up, you know, which is not that fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I've been vocal about playgrounds and bits and pieces over the last couple of years, and I have to confess that I have gone up and down in some of my thinkings. I have to just state that I've seen an amazing thing happen just in this last week. And I talk about my local park near me that was an old playground, and it has been upgraded fairly recently. Before, when it was the old playground, I could say there was no one using it. It hardly saw anyone at the park ever. Now that we have upgraded it, and it's a local level, the usage has blown right out. And this holidays, I've been amazed at how many days there have been families there having picnics. We've had kids playing cricket. We've had kids playing soccer there as well, as with the playground area and the grass area next to it. It's a playground that's used 24 hours a day. We have teenagers that after they've been to Hungry Jack's or McDonald's will be there at 1, 2 in the morning and are using that playground. Our outdoor staff use it as well. They park their vehicles there, they get their coffees, and they have a great time there as well. It is used by grandparents. It's not necessarily with their grandchildren, but the elderly go and they sit there at the park and lots of people eat there. The usage of that park has grown dramatically. And so I think to work out a demand for a local park is very, very hard when you've got the old infrastructure there. You really don't know what the future usage is going to be. I think we do have to go back to our values and what we have as values for council, and that we, society itself, is wanting to encourage kids to get outside and play. Now, we're finding that if we do have the newer equipment or an upgrade, the shade areas, the picnic areas, that we are seeing a usage happening. And I'm really encouraged by that. Yep. I'm now going with both because I think we're seeing that need, because the larger ones, they're great, the destination ones, and the different levels of playgrounds are needed, but not at the expense of all of the local ones. We still need to make sure we've got some of those around. However, the other side of the coin is that I don't think this should be isolated from what we've got as skate parks, pump tracks, multi-purpose courts, because I think they also fit that bill of what we're providing for the community. So and also nature playgrounds now as well, a big thing. I think the variety is what we need to be providing our community. And we need to look, because we haven't done that in the past, as to how we look at all of these together. We're still looking at a lot of these things separately. So I think we do need to look at a way forward where we can combine the looking of these and not keep it as separate entities anymore. So, but we are needing to make sure we remember our values and getting people out in the community.
I think I remember at the end of the last term we did a few upgrades, and there were a few that, you know, we thought would upgrade and people would love it, and perhaps it wasn't getting the response we wanted. I know that the shaded playground that we put up in Plimpton Park, yep, that gets a lot of use. So the shading is something that draws people in. But I think we need to look at what draws people in. I'm glad that Councillor Byron talked about nature play spaces. I think that's another way forward. We won't have the same maintenance issues. But we also need to look at the areas that they're in. In the northern part of the city, there'll be playgrounds where they can't even have like any type of play equipment in the yard. In some of the larger houses, and predominantly in the south, there may be quite larger properties where they can actually have some sort of outdoor play area in the back. But consistently, especially in the north, we're going to have a whole lot of places that basically have an area where you can sit and have some food and entertain with a few friends. That's your backyard. So, yes, I think we really need to find out what our residents want in each of the areas, or what they're likely to use. I'd actually think we need to probably look outside of the organisation and get a bit of a feel as to get a bit of a fresh perspective on what we need to do. Yeah. Yes. So, because I think there will be some places where people will want to just go and sit and use the slide or the nature play space, and there's others where we've probably got stuff where we don't need it. So we really need to drill down and find out exactly where those places are better suited.
Thank you. Two points. One, and I can only speak for my own area. Hopefully Ms. Clutterman can assist here, but my understanding was that when we decided to upgrade to neighbourhood and regional, that happened, but we didn't remove the local ones because they still had some life left in them. So the community wanted the bigger, better playgrounds. They were delivered. But when we came to the meeting their end of the bargain, all of a sudden, we want them all. And the other thing I noticed is when I did do a lot of door knocking, specifically asking people about playgrounds, and I visited particularly all the ones around Lapwing. Lapwing never had anybody on it, neither did the two neighbourhood ones. And the local young people I spoke to all actually walked all the way past those playgrounds to get to the regional one at Quaylo. And more recently, doing the Hallett Cove foreshore, talking to people, I've had residents that drive out of Hallett Cove to Jervoy Street. They don't go to any playgrounds that we currently have. So that just gives you an indication of what people actually do think of local and neighbourhood level ones.
What I'm hearing, councillors, is that we're actually fairly evenly balanced, and I suppose that's why this matter has come back to council numerous times, because we're actually evenly divided over the strategy of having better playgrounds but fewer in total versus maintaining the local while we have the regional, even if it costs more. And I'm also hearing the call for more information, particularly about users, or that is the community, and what they really want. We've made a whole lot of assumptions about, well, we could have playgrounds 500 metres away from any particular home, but we haven't a lot of data that actually talks about playground usage. Now, I want to go to Ms. Cladderham to talk about the maps she has and see how they might help. But Councillor Crossland, you've got something to add?
Just one other point, and I'd just pick up the point that Councillor Byron made, which I think is really valid. Is in some areas, rather than a playground, we've provided a multi-purpose court where lots of different young people can go and play. To me, that is equivalent to a playground, and I think that should be in the mix of a provision that we've provided.
Yep. So, Ms. Cladderham, before the meeting, we've asked staff to prepare a number of maps. Can you present that in a way that relates to this sort of divided view of strategy that's been discussed? Please. So we're going to have a look at some maps on the screen.
So we have provided a series of maps. This first map, it's in Appendix 1, is all playgrounds with a 500 metre radius with the barriers. So that's all local, neighbourhood and regional playgrounds, north and south. You might need to scroll down. So that is what we went to the ward briefings, and they're the playgrounds that came up.
So can you then, Ms. Dean or Ms. Cladham, can you then speak to that in light of this dilemma of whether we have fewer and better, or have both a concentration of local and bigger, more complex playgrounds?
So this map goes to the principles in the draft playground policy that everyone will have access to a playground within 400 to 500 metres of their residence or workplace.
Well, please go on. Anything else you'd like to add that you can help us with? Or other maps, if you like?
Sure.
Okay. Just one question about that map. That map included, did it include proposed new playgrounds or just existing?
It had existing as well as the proposed ones that were in the recommendations from the report.
Okay. Yeah, yep, all right. Well, so what's this next map?
So this map is all neighbourhood playgrounds mapped at 750 metres, and overlaid on those are all the local ones at 500 metres. So the local ones are the red ones. The orange is the 750. Councillor Crossland is the one who instigated this mapping, I think, to show that where there's a neighbourhood playground and a local playground close to each other. Yes, you do. It's Appendix 2. It's a very large map, so it may be hard to load.
Perhaps for completeness, can we have a look at the southern end of the council for that one? One of those times when a paper agenda would be useful. Right here. So obviously this one seems to show more gaps than the previous one. Is that right?
The regional ones haven't been included in here. They're the blue stars on the maps, but they haven't had a circle drawn around them.
That is the current regionals.
Yes, they're the current regionals. Oh, no, there's proposed regional as well. Glenthorne Farm is shown on that map.
Oh, yes, I see. Councillor Crossland, do you want to briefly speak to your reasoning for the request here?
Thank you, Your Worship. I was just exploring at the moment we wanted local playgrounds every 500, and then we wanted additional neighbourhood ones roughly every 750, and my thinking here was, is the 500 metres someone should get to every playground actually incorrect? Should it actually be everyone should have be within 500 metres of a local playground or 750 metres of a neighbourhood level playground would seem to be the more correct wording for what facilities we've been trying to provide to the community.
So, shall we move on to the next map so we know what's available?
So, Appendices 3, 4 and 5 just show... Appendix 3 is just the mapping of the local playgrounds. Appendix 4 is just the mapping of the neighbourhood. And 5 is just the mapping of the regional, just to show you the concentrations of those in all areas of the city.
Just a question on that one, Your Worship. Can you just confirm, because I believe there's one not far from where I live that's not actually on that map. Is that because it's due to be removed, so they're already being removed off the plan, which may never happen?
That's right.
So proposed removals are not on appendix.
No, but they should. They probably should be, because they're not a given to be removed.
Ms. Cleverham?
Council's already endorsed the proposed removals, and therefore the mapping has included has not shown those as future assets, because council's already endorsed those for removal subject to consultation.
But haven't we had local playgrounds subject to consultation which still exist today, because the community didn't want us to take them out?
Yes, that's right. But in terms of our future planning and preparation of these maps, for the planning purposes, we have made the assumption, based on Council's endorsement of those removals, that will occur.
So, Ms. Dean and Ms. Cladham, does that cover all of the maps that you're presenting?
If you go to... This is neighbourhood?
it's 4, is it?
That's Appendix 4.
Right.
Appendix 5. These are the regional playgrounds at 1.5 kilometres. Appendix 6 is every playground in the City of Marion with a 750-metre diameter, 750-metre access.
And indeed, the Mayor asked for that just to see what the gaps would be if the setting was different.
Yep,
please.
Also, get our head around, and I might be asking a question that's pretty obvious, but we play. You go down to the playground and off you go, we'll see you later. Generally, parents or grandparents or some significant other would put a cup into the kids because of the sad times we might live in.
I think most of us would have witnessed that. Yep.
Yep. So that should be also a factor in our thinking, because if that is another trigger for the kids to be accompanied, then they're more likely to have access to a motor car and go to somewhere that is more logical to go to. So I just thought I'd make that point, Mr. Mayor. We don't have kids walking to school by themselves much anymore.
Yes.
For the same reason.
Well, I think that's what Councillor Crossan was in, you know, it's in that vein that he was initially suggesting we can do with less small if we have more larger and attractive and complex ones. Councillor Westwood?
Yes, I think at this stage it seems to me that we really need to survey face-to-face the people that are going to, in particular, the smaller parts that are well-furnished, as Councillor Byron has mentioned about her local park, and actually just ask them straight out why they're there, what area they come from, because I think it's very valid, that kind of thing, and have to do that on several occasions at least to get an idea.
Well, I think we're
up for that, actually.
I mean, it is a theme that several councils come up with. So how would we approach, or how would staff approach, task of two things. It's observing sites for actual usage is one. Traffic planners are quite accustomed to it. I'll have someone sitting in the ute in the high-vis vest marking off on a clipboard. It's not exactly a smart city, but they're pretty smart people. The other aspect to it is actually interviewing or surveying in some way playground users so that we know. I mean, would they prefer, a local playground or a more complex playground if they know that one costs 10 times more than the other? I mean, the financial factor needs to be brought into it in asking people. How would we approach those two tasks?
Sorry, Mr. Mayor, can I just call her?
No, just a sec. I've asked the question. Let's hear the answer. I'll come back to you.
Well, we can develop a survey and certainly undertake some on-site surveying or postal surveying or surveying through the Making Marion website. That's certainly something that we can undertake. We can do some on-site visits to parks and playgrounds throughout the course of non-high-use days and do some observations. This, however, would be unexpected and therefore would require further resources to be undertaken, as we had planned to finish this project up in June just gone.
But, aren't there future playgrounds that aren't being designed because they haven't been approved by council? Doesn't that free up some staff time?
No, we are undertaking the three-year works program endorsed by council at this point in time and carrying along with that with the current resources that we have.
Okay, well, does that mean we don't actually have to decide this for another year and a half?
That's entirely up to council.
Well, what's your view?
We'll await your direction.
right. That's quite humorous. Ms. Cladderham, you've heard the two points of view. I mean, that's what I distill out of it. Leaving aside the desire for more evidence, you've got this one view, which is that you've got to maintain your local access, perhaps whether it be within 500 metres or whatever, plus develop your neighbourhood and regional. And you've got the other view, which is that give more emphasis to the neighbourhood and regional. The local is not so important because people are going to go to the bigger ones anyway. Now, my question is, how do you recommend that we resolve that dilemma? What are the questions we should be asking? How can you help us resolve that?
Look, I believe that Council drafted a playground policy earlier this year, which was consulted on. We did get some response, but not a lot of community consultation and feedback through that. So we could go back out to the community with some options. If council should wish, that would present some options that do reflect the discussion tonight in terms of those two ways and two options that could be presented going forward to gauge further community feedback that would help in your decision making. Certainly, however, from the feedback and from a professional opinion, I would not see any problem proceeding with the current draft policy as is, making some tweaks where possible and potentially going through the list of the proposed new playgrounds in the way that perhaps we did to fund my neighbourhood projects and determine whether they are in and out.
I think that just about draws our workshop to a close, because I will come back to you, I know, but I don't think we're going to make much more progress. Now, procedurally, let me say that at the last general council meeting, the item dealing with this issue was adjourned to the end of November. So technically, we come back at the end of November. Maybe this needs to be packaged up in a manner which assists us coming to a resolution, and maybe we have a further workshop then, possibly finishing with a motion to actually resolve the issue. But it does sound like members are calling for further information. Now, I'll come back to you. Anyone on this side of the table first? Councillor Telfer?
I have trouble with the logic of going out with a framework and asking people, do you want your local playground? They will, obviously, you can say yes, but it's about how we cover the whole of our city appropriately with playgrounds. And I think as long as we go and ask each local group, do they want a playground? Yes. Go and ask local councillors, are you supporting a playground on every open space area? Yes. But we have to look at it as an overview of the whole city. So I'm hoping that there will be leadership from that department on a whole of city viewpoint.
Yes. What I meant to imply there was that options should come back to council initially, not putting the framework out to the community. But what we do need to go back to the community is asking the questions and making the observations about playground usage. That seems to be what several members want. Then around the table, Councillor Pryor. Yes, I think, as has been suggested before, councillors would want to be consulted about the manner of the consultation before it occurs, but it's something that staff tonight can go away and think about now that they, well, I hope they have a better idea of what we're driving at.
Councillor Telfer hit on the right line of thinking from a council's perspective. If I go to my local community and say, do you want us to take away that local park? Of course the answer is no.
But we're also looking after a budget. That's the point.
Yeah, that's
true, balancing it.
But they don't necessarily care until we ping them for rates. They don't care.
Well, that's, as Councillor Hull, we need to show leadership, and that's whole of council leadership. Councillor Hull?
You beat me to it, leadership. The staff, I think, have reflected that they think the leadership comes from us. Well, yes, to a point, but only on the information that we know. And I would like the leadership across the board, not just in this department, but in all the departments, and hopefully those departments do talk to each other, the old silo bit, that I keep detecting, Mr. Skull, I'm still detecting that, worries me, because the elected members are only as good as the information they're provided, particularly the timely nature of the information. Don't actually suggest, well, yeah, we can sell that piece of playground or that piece of dirt, and then come back in later and tell me, well, oh, there's a shortage of open space in that area. That didn't work for me. We're paying the staff, and I wish the boys in yellow were still at the back. We're paying the staff in this case good money to provide us with good information. I'd like to see an improvement in that. Seriously, I would really like to see an improvement in that area. No harm's been done so far, I must add, but if we continue on this path where, we're waiting on you to tell us, it is not going to work for the people of the City of Marion, ultimately.
Okay. Point well made. Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
I agree certainly that we have to watch out what we're asking or think of what we're asking the people who are asking. And in particular, we need, I believe now, as I think I've indicated already, that we need to target the successful ones to find out why they're successful. That's the first thing. The other thing, by the way, just quickly, is workshop. This is one of the few times that I would like to see a piece of butcher paper or the screen would do, and we actually have two columns and note things on in each column that we agree and don't agree with. Because I think that so far there's been general agreement that is it the regional parks, you know, the bigger ones, they're going to be popular and we're going to have them anyway. That's a good idea, right? So I think everyone's agreed on that. The stumbling block is, should we keep the little parks furnished or unfurnished, and why do people go to some of the small parks? That's the crux.
Yes, well, the mayor's been keeping that blank butcher's paper in his mind and filling it in based on your contributions, and I've been reflecting those ideas, so hopefully you've caught that. Yes, of course.
What I would actually also suggest is that, of course, you expected that we all as councillors will send in a few questions to the staff to see if you'd like to use them, because out of those
there's nothing to stop you doing that, but based on the discussion, they'll formulate something and consult with us, and we'll move on from there. Councillor Valescu?
I guess the thing about the budget is we need to tell our community that we are spending significantly more money on our playgrounds, on our parks. We are also looking to manage how they're all looked after to make sure that there's no surprises, and quantifying the cost for all residents. So therefore, when we go out to our communities, why don't we target geographical areas and say, look, what would you prefer? We're looking to roughly spend this amount of money. It'll give us either these options or these options. And that's why we're asking you, do you think this facility suits you more? So give them a bit of a choice in the context of an overall spend in that general area. Hopefully they won't be saying, oh, they're spending more in that area, things like that. I hope we don't get that. More about what services we can provide. The second thing is that whilst there are areas where you do need to use the car, we do need to remember that people will look to save money, especially the poorer people on fixed incomes that are perhaps on pensions. So those ones where they walk to are important. So let's not forget that in our rush to provide the draw card playgrounds.
Right. One more thing.
I think also we need to be a bit clear to our staff what we want. I think we do have a bit of a mixed view, and we did get a suggestion at the end as, you know, let's proceed with what we did and look at those extra bits. So I don't think it's necessarily sort of fair to kind of target people.
Councillor, we are here, we've just spent an hour and a quarter trying to clarify the group intention, and it's not easy because there's a genuine division of views about how to do it. So the whole point of this evening was to give some greater clarity to staff, and I've tried to draw that clarity out of the discussion as much as possible, but when there's a division of views, it's impossible to go much further without further information. So that's the next step. At least we've been clear about what we're asking for in terms of further information. Yeah. Finally, Councillor Crossan.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yeah, I think a couple of points that have come up which I found were really good. One would be to go to the community and say, in your geographical area, with the finances available, you can have 10 local or 5 local, 5 neighbourhood. So give them a little bit of an overview, what that actually physically means to them, whether they get how many neighbourhood and how many local they could have a mix of. As far as getting the information from the right people, that's probably the most essential part of this process. I can tell you that if you go to many of our neighbourhood playgrounds, you'll be waiting there weeks before you get somebody to ask the question, and we'll end up with a result like we had before, 3 people. I would rather break down those silos. Let's get the development team, the open space team, and Uncle Todd Cobley and all, and actually go to the people we need to ask, which is the teenagers, the primary school kids, or even the parents of the kindergarten kids, and be proactive about it. Let's actually say we want 100 from this group, 100 from this group, in different geographic areas, and actually get the right information from those people. And I can't see any other way of doing it. We know mail outs don't work.
Thank you. Well, that gives staff plenty of ideas to go on with. I'm going to draw this session to a close. Thank you, everyone, for your contributions. And thank you, Ms. Clutterham and Ms. Dean, for the maps and the work you've done in preparing for tonight. We're on to page 297 of the agenda, but before we do, before we get to the motion about Light Square, I think we have a deputation, and thank you for your patience. Sorry, a bit of pest control. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Stretton. Mr. Peter Stretton's coming forward. In fact, we have a number of historical people in the gallery tonight, by which I mean members of the Historical Society, rather. So we welcome your contribution this evening. If I had been asked, I would have said probably come about 8:30 p.m., but I hope you've found the proceedings thus far interesting anyway. Yeah, come right up to the front, Mr. Stretton. We've got a place for you up here. Ms. Dixon will show you what to do. But it's worth pondering, isn't it, that the councillors around the table, who are largely volunteers, although we do have a healthy allowance, spend about 45 nights a year, 45 Tuesdays a year, going through business like this, whether it be in committee or general council. And tonight's not atypical in having an agenda of about 300 pages long. Anyway, over to Mr. Stretton. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Ladies and gentlemen, I represent tonight the Marion Historic Village Project Group, which was a group established by this council, or your predecessors rather, some 10 years ago. And it was to advise the council on matters concerning the Marion Village. Now, for those of you who may be, if you pardon me, I've got problems with knowing what to press here. That's it, good. Thank you. For those of you who may not have been in this locality for a while, that's what the Marion Village looked like back in 1949, when it was mostly agricultural country with grapevines, etc. If you still don't know where we are, I'm sure you will know that magnificent building, which was the first Marion Inn to be built in the place. Now, specifically tonight, our concerns are about Light Square. Light Square is actually a place named after Colonel William Light, who was the actual architect and surveyor of the city of Adelaide. We are two cities outside of Adelaide that can say they were also surveyed by the team managed by Colonel William Light. Gawler is the other one, a little known secret in actual fact, because even some of their own residents don't realise that. And I suspect that many residents of Marion don't accept or don't know that that's the case as well. It's so much the case that we refer to Light Square, a place which is also common in Gawler and in Adelaide with our own city here. Light Square we refer to as the birthplace of the city of Marion, because that's where some of the early surveys took place. Now, your predecessors and their wisdom in past years have established a heritage walk through the village. There are 24 sites which people can visit. There is a brochure that the council printed, and on that brochure, which is about to be reprinted because of its popularity, there are 24 sites listed, and on the other side a map that people can follow. And we provide some guides for groups, and I'm pleased to say that there are an increasing number of primary school classes wanting to do the walk and to wanting to do the small museum that we as a community have set up as well. And that's good, because people like Mr. Jarman down the back there talks about the olden days, and they are so interested in some of the gadgets and the bits and pieces and the buildings and the places that they see. There are a number of footpath signs. There's one about the local police station, which perhaps some of you didn't know existed back in 1933. And there are walkers that are coming from places far distant from the Marion Village. We've had people come from Gawler by train, getting out at Marion Station, walking through to the village, being met by some of our guides, taken for walks, having lunch down in the George Street Reserve nearby, and then catching the train back again. That's a day's outing for people who are retired. We've had school children come from down south on the train with their teachers, visiting and doing parts of the walk, not necessarily the whole lot, but parts of it. There is an interest outside the Marion domain. There's some of the walkers in Light Square a few years ago now. They're looking in this particular instance at some of the plaques and some of the tiles which are on some seats that are there, which were actually hand-painted by children in workshops held a few years ago. Some of you would be aware that in 2011 there was an upgrade to Light Square. That represents two of the four corners of Light Square, which is actually not a square in the strict sense that we might think of in terms of parklands, etc. It's a square formed simply by the intersection of two streets, Market Street and Nixon Street, in the Marion Village. Now, that was a plan, and this is what it actually looks like now. I can't go backwards because I don't know how to press this thing that way, but you'll see there's quite a difference. Oh, I did it. Look at that. Oh, wow. So that's the plan of what it was to look like on two of the corners of that square, and sadly to say, things have not turned out to be exactly the way we would have liked them to be. That's what it looks like often today. It's a sad echo of what we thought it would look like. We often have found, unfortunately, that other areas nearby, there's a drinking fountain that was set up. It's more notably known these days for the slime, the green moss that grows down the centre of it, with people saying, yuck, I don't want to drink out of that.
You'll have to start to draw to a conclusion, Mr. Skirton. We normally allow 5 minutes for these presentations.
Oh, I thought the clocks were running very well, but I'll try. I'll be very, very quick. There's a rubbish bin that hadn't been cleaned for a while. There's another one coming up with some rubbish that people have left, and there's another scene of the dryness of the area. We thought, what can we do about it? And so a group of us put our thoughts together when we heard about community gardens, and we visited some sites around the metropolitan area and thought, well, what would these things look like if they were planted in Light Square? A lot of difference, we'll note, between those sorts of areas and these here. So we did learn a bit about community gardens, and we actually, with the council's assistance, produced a brochure. And we distributed by hand ourselves, many of the people present today, 1,000 copies of these within the village of Marion and just beyond. And we had 10 interested people in becoming gardeners to assist as volunteers in making Light Square look a bit more attractive. We went back to the guide in our planning. We looked back and said, well, in the intersection itself, those white areas could be planted with something more colourful. Then we came across the council's own brochure which said, let's make Marion green. And we thought, wow, we're on a winner here. We've got support. We've got people that were thinking the same way. So we actually had a couple of working bees after we were told it's not a community garden you want, it's a verge garden. And verges are the responsibility of the householders living alongside. We approached the householders and got unanimous support for what we wanted to do. We found that there were water things that were on, but then we found later that they weren't connected. Subsequently, and in my final minute or two, we heard about this program called Fund My Neighbourhood, state government ability to obtain grants, and so we applied for one of those, and I think that's going to be the subject of a motion in a moment from Councillor Telfer. We're looking at doing the gardening work that I've talked about. We would love to see some fence panels put onto that back fence across the intersection in Light Square. There's a closer view coming up. There it is.
Really, we'll have to finish soon, Mr. Spratt.
Okay, I've got two more shots, Mr. Chair. Can I just show those and then I'll be as quiet as a mouse.
Thank you.
There are some diagrams that we drew up which could be placed on framework in front of the fence we view. There's some of the types of panels with photographs and brief explanations which would give us a real lift in that square so people know what they're looking at. And then there's what they do in the city, which is, without many words, much better, I think, than we're managing to do presently. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your indulgence.
Thank you. Just within the 5 minutes. Brilliant. There is a bit of business to do before we get to that motion. But I think it's not too far away, so we should just keep going with the normal course of business. Now, we come to questions on notice, and at this point, Councillor Carey, I believe you wanted to make a personal explanation.
I'll leave it at that. I won't make any comments.
All right, thank you, Councillor.
Mr. Mayor, with the question on notice, could I just ask that when we do get a dip-tie response, that it actually does appear in the agenda?
Councillor Hull's referring to page 298. He has a question on designated bike lanes which has been answered. And the reply from staff indicates that we're waiting for an answer from DIPTI. I suppose it wouldn't... probably the best response would be, by leave of the meeting, we could ask for the DIPTI response to be recorded in the minutes. So...
Just as good.
Is there leave of the meeting for the Deputy response to this question recorded in the minutes? If there's no objection, then if that could be noted in the appropriate way, and it could be included as a future, perhaps, I'll leave it to staff to follow an appropriate procedure. Now, Councillor Crossland, what's your
got point? A question without notice for the Chair?
Well, no, unless it's exactly on the point of biplanes, for example. But
it's about what's something that came up during this meeting.
Well, can you characterise the nature of your question?
It's just to give Councillor Carey an option to maybe withdraw a current project that we currently have on the books so that we can then look at saving some money, and maybe he can forward that motion to try and get staff a pay rise. So if he puts a motion without notice to withdraw the Edwardstown funding, I think 8 million.
Councillor,
Councillor
Crossland,
then
Councillor Crossland, order.
Continue.
Order. It sounds like that might be something that you take up with Councillor Carey between meetings. I'm actually not familiar with the motion you're talking about. So I'm in the Chair's discretion, I'm not allowing the question without notice.
Sorry.
I'm not allowing further comment on it either. No. Page 300. There's the answer to a question from the Mayor about the cost of the Anzac Veterans Film Project for members' digestion. Now, just two more items, so we're travelling well. Page 301, Glenthorne Farm. I know this has been on the books a while, so I think we should deal with this first. Councillor Hull to move, and I remind members it's a rescission motion. Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, the first thing, it's not a rescission motion. There's no motion to rescind. It's simply amending the resolution of the 11th of November.
Right, order. I'll just ask for the governance manager's view on that.
Through the Chair, the way that it has been worded is it has been worded as an amendment from a previous resolution.
Well, my ruling is that there was an original motion endorsing the allocation of funding for a certain community engagement plan. Then Council decided not to proceed with that funding, so that's a decision, and now the Councillor wants to have that money spent. So it's in contradiction to a resolution of the Council. Therefore, the motion is acceptable, but it's a rescission motion. That's how I see it. But I'm just going to check again with the Governance Manager.
Through the Chair, yes, the Mayor is correct in that it is a rescission motion, and then you are proposing to move a new motion.
Well,
so all that means is that the instead of the word amends in the first line, that should be rescinds, and all it means is that an absolute majority of the Council is required for it to be passed. Otherwise, the motion is in order.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I'm not going to split hairs on it. I did spend a bit of time with staff making sure I had this right, and that's why I put it forward in the form I did. Because
Because the original motion wasn't rescinded, it was simply amended.
Are you now...
I'm happy to rescind it and do it the way you wish.
Well, if you're accepting the Mayor's ruling as a point of order and guidance as to wording, and you have rescinds instead of amends, I consider it to be in order.
Okay. I'm happy to proceed that way. I did attempt to get this right. But
all right. So you're moving accordingly. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Look, the rationale for this is that the motion as it stands, that we actually amended, indicates that we start a campaign in April 2018, after the state election. The community is actually asking me now, and other members, why would you do that? Why did you change the motion? And the only thing that I can actually ascertain is that because the Liberal Party have come out with a fairly bold strategy for this piece of land, then that's all we need. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, when we approached the Oaklands Crossing, we didn't have that one-sided outlook. We wanted to have bipartisan commitment to that project before we took the foot off the gas. And that's exactly what we did. So what I'm saying with this is that if we've extracted a suitable position from the South Australian Liberal Party, we should be looking to do that with the Labor Party. There's no guarantee that the Liberal Party will win the next election. We really need to go into this even-handed and determine that this is something that we need to address on behalf of the community. Now, for one of our elected members to approach me and suggest that I was trying to give $26,400 to David Spear's election campaign, I find offensive and disrespectful to my role as an elected member.
Maybe a good note to finish on, because you're out of time.
Well, I had no idea, Mr. Mayor. Clock seemed to... It's a cost-saving. The clock's gone.
If you want to give, you know, one or two sentences to sum up, if you wish.
Well, Mr. Mayor, in short, what I'm saying is that we should apply exactly the same strategy to this as we did with the Oaklands Crossing. We actually had it right the first time. For some unknown reason, we changed it. We should actually now go forward to this next state election, lobbying both sides, and actually maybe three sides now, Mr. Mayor, to actually get the outcome that we want with Glenthorne Farm.
Councillor, I've got a question in response to that. When a community member or whoever asked you about why the change was made, did you explain to them that this is nothing like Oaklands Crossing? Why? Because that was a case where council was approaching both Liberal and Labor, and we did that effectively. But this is a case where we already have what we want from one. No, just hear me out.
No,
Just hear me out.
Well, the clock should be going for you, Mr. Mayor, if you don't be speaking to the motion.
It's only a 2.5-minute question. The question is that in this case, what you're suggesting, we're spending money not to encourage the Liberal Party, because the Liberal Party have a position on it which is helpful to council's goals. So the money would be spent only against the Labor government, and this would cost us millions of dollars in lobbying for other issues. It would be an anti-Labor move. Did you explain that to the community?
Mr. Mayor, if you're asking me the question, you need to give me the opportunity to answer now.
That's fair. Right. It was a question.
Now the ballpark's changed. We have three players in this state election now, three considerable players. So that's a big change. The other thing is, I could not answer that man. If that's what you're asking me, I could not give a reasonable explanation, and that's why I'm moving this, because I could not give him an answer.
Well, now, and that's why I'm trying to help you out.
Mr. Mayor, can I suggest, you've done this over a series of meetings now, when I've got a motion before the council, that you've actually taken the initiative to actually talk down the motion, right? Now, I respect that you have a right to say something. Usually that's at the end of discussion, but for you to actually condemn motions before members have even had a chance to speak is not really what we really want in this place.
You can always move a procedural motion, I suppose. Now, you've had your say. Is that seconded? Councillor Westwood seconding the motion. Wish to speak?
Yes, just briefly. No clock required. I can see the point of view that it could be seen as bipartisan, but I think that we should probably, well, not probably, we should go out there energetically on to both or the three major parties, whatever, or there could be four, and actually approach them and use the money to campaign to get what we want for the community.
Thank you. And this is a bit of information relevant to the debate, but the lobbying is continuing. So I just want to be clear, the motion is about whether council spends money on a public campaign. The lobbying to get the result continues. I'm actively involved in that from time to time and very keenly looking to the March timing that we're working towards. So... is there anyone opposing the motion? Councillor Lescu?
Yeah, look, I think it's a very good point. Our position is always clear, and we're quite vocal as a council, that we want something done on that land. We've got one party who has said that they want something community-based on that land, and that in itself will put pressure. Also, us as a council saying what we want something to happen. It's been locked up for too long, and nothing's happened really to assist the community. So I don't think we need to go into a campaign, and I think it can be seen as counterproductive in that respect. And also, we don't need to spend the money. We can put the pressure on by outlining what we want, and we don't need to spend the money. And I think that's the thing. If later on, after the election, we don't get the response we want, regardless of whoever wins, then we may need to put a bit of pressure. But beforehand.
A point of order, Councillor Holt?
I think the question needs to be asked, is Councillor Gillespie representing the Labor Party or is himself right now?
Look, I'm sick of you doing that, Bruce.
Well, order. It's not really a point of order. It's something... There's no conflict of interest involved there. It's something that you might allude to respectfully in the closing remarks, so I don't uphold the point of order. Had you more to say, Councillor Vlescu?
Yes, I did, Your Worship. I'm trying to save the ratepayers' money, but I'm also trying to make sure that we don't get in a situation, especially with the pressure of an election, where we get caught up in something we don't need to. And it's not going to be detrimental, I guess, to us as a group. It'll be detrimental to our community, because we don't want to alienate potential funding partners when we don't need to. We can put the pressure on without spending the money.
Now, the question is whether there is anyone else speaking in favour of the motion. A question from Councillor Crossan.
Thank you, Your Worship. I also just have a few concerns, but I think what's not clear is we're lobbying right now. We do want this land to be conserved for all the things we'd love to see there. What exactly would the 26,400 deliver? And is it going to potentially be seen as support for one party over another? Or was the plan to use it some other way, which is quite clearly not going to be seen as that type of a campaign?
I think it might be advisable for staff to answer that. Perhaps Mr Clark would have the best handle on it. If council allocated funding to this public and political campaign, what would be the approach?
Through the chair, the approach would be exactly the same way as the Oakland Crossing campaign. So that would be community flyers, rallies, advertising and videos, the idea would be to build up political pressure to obtaining a public commitment.
Mr. Clark, you mean from the Labor government? Mr. Clark?
Correct.
Answers your question, Councillor Crossan. Councillor Westwood has a question. Well, actually, you did second the motion, but go ahead. Go ahead.
I forgot the question now and all that excitement. Thank you very much.
Oh, you did have your chance when you seconded the motion, but is anyone speaking in favour of the motion? No? Well, I'll leave it to Councillor Hull to close the debate. Thank you, Councillor.
Mr. Mayor, I welcome our manager of community information's comments. It would be exactly like the Oaklands Crossing. And we actually did very well with that, as you might recall. And I think the community were delighted with what we achieved for so little. We actually, partway through that campaign, had an indication from the Liberal Party that they were willing to put money into the project, and it was the beginning. It was the beginning. It was the first step towards getting that project completed. And then ultimately we actually had bipartisan support, but we never actually took our foot off the gas. That lobbying, that action, that campaign continued right throughout. All I'm asking you members is to actually replicate that campaign. Not leave it open-ended with not knowing what one of the major players, or maybe two other major players' opinion is on it. We don't know. The Labor Party have had plenty of opportunity to actually show their hand on this and have not so far, apart from maybe having a discussion with the mayor. We can't leave anything to chance. It is ludicrous to have a campaign, as the current motion says, in April next year, the month after the state election. Why would we do that? This motion, as it stands, makes no sense. So you're prepared to actually spend $26,400, but only after we find out what the result is of the election. Now, as for the Labor Party, they're very welcome to be beneficiaries, if you like, of this $26,400 by actually coming to the party and saying, yes, we will match the Liberal Party proposal or do something even better. Or, for that matter, the Xenophon Party can actually be involved in this as well. And we need to test them, because particularly if a balance of power situation exists, we need to have them on board. Things have changed since this motion was last dealt with. And I urge you all, members, to actually look at this in exactly the same vein. We're not doing anything different to the Oaklands Crossing campaign. And it's a great example of where we, as a council, can be involved in public advocacy, contrary to what the Mayor is telling us repeatedly. We do have a role, and we've had a role, and we've been successful. All we need to do is reflect that again in the form of this motion.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? Motion is lost by majority. Division is called. All those in favour, please stand in your place. Councillors Kerry, Hull and Westwood, you may sit down. All those against are Councillors Telfer, Hutchinson, Pryor, Byram, Valescu, Appleby, Gard and Crossland. Thank you. Common sense prevails.
Mayor, seriously, once again, you are showing some insensitivity. You're reflecting on us and not respecting our opinions.
No, I'm actually reflecting on the majority of the council, on the resolution of the council.
Yes, but at the same time, you're putting down those councillors who had a different opinion.
No, not at all. No, there's nothing personal.
We disagree.
I must admit, I did feel a responsibility, without weighing too much into the debate, not to allow a shamefully self-defeating motion to succeed. So I'm certainly glad about the result. And, I've consistently steered the course of this council to an apolitical and constructive approach to all of our funding issues. No. I explained the difference between that and this. Councillor Telfer, to move in relation to Light Square, Marion.
I move that we have a concept plan to rejuvenate Light Square And this will include colourful plants, and this helps to create our guided walk and tourist destination point of arrival. The budget that I've put there of 20,000, well, the staff have brought forward, helped bring forward of 20,000, but in fact, in Fund Your Neighbourhood, the group of volunteers that want to help council virtually to do their work, as I see it, had put in 14,100. So staff are being extra cautious about this. The largest cost is the cost for irrigating. And we have been through over 3 years looking as a group, and particularly the Marion Historic Village Project Group, of which I am the liaison person. They have been to different avenues of council, and it hasn't sat within any particular silo of council, and that's why it's come tonight. What has happened is this project sits in arts and culture, in heritage. It has been had a look through by our biodiversity officer under sustainability, but because it is about coloured plants like maybe carpet roses or some non-native plants, it doesn't sit there. Open space team have had a look at it. It came forward as a community and gardening project, but it's unsafe because it would have to be all fenced around if it was going to be a community garden. It's been looked at for city activation, tourism, and businesses being a bit further away. It's been looked at in streetscape. It's been looked at as individuals with their verges, but claimed by council as curtilage. And so it sits in all projects that I've mentioned to some degree. And so tonight it needs a separate motion. The outcome will be a unique place of destination, or a unique place that people can come to where they feel they can take a photo, just as you take a photo at Montefort Hill of lights vision, where the buses pull out. In the same way, groups of people walk, and there will be another tour next Thursday, come to this place. You've seen the pictures of it. It needs something smarter as a point of arrival. So I so move.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Firstly, I wanted to commend the Marion Historical Village Group for not only enduring the council meeting to this late hour, but also their passionate work that they've undertaken for many years now, and I've seen that grow over my 7 years now with council. Members, what we have here tonight is a bit of community passion, a driven group in our community who are caught up with a bit of red tape around financing their initiative, and they've certainly articulated that very well tonight, so I commend the motion.
Is that opposed by any councillor? If not, then I'll simply put the motion. Those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. So, order. I've had two groups applauding in the gallery tonight. We must be doing a fantastic job. I hope for those of you historically minded that it was worth the wait, and no doubt interesting to follow the convolutions of council as well. Now, a couple of things. I've had a request for a notice without motion from Councillor Valescu regarding Dipti signs, but I consider that council doesn't have enough information to make a decision on that tonight, and I'd welcome that being brought back for the next general council meeting. Well, I appreciate the urgency, but that point is not known, and I maintain that council doesn't have sufficient information. You know, if you consider it still significant, then please bring it back in 2 weeks. Now, that almost concludes the meeting, but the Chief Executive wishes to provide... footpath. I don't have that in my agenda, so I'm always happy to be advised by staff when there's work to be done. So page 309, Councillor Crossland to move.
Thank you, Your Worship. This motion is connected to the ongoing current development of Grand Central Reserve, which is on the small piece of paper which I've handed out. Very briefly, we'll be having events there. In fact, on Anzac Day, we have well over 5,000 people attend that. Many park at the train station. Many others, for the other events we're proposed to have, we'll be encouraging them to travel by train. When we first saw the design at the ward briefing, we realised that there was a huge section of footpath missing on one side of the reserve. And just to show you on this plan here, there's only a section of footpath on that blank bit there that's going to be constructed as part of the development. This actually means that if you do walk across the reserve, you have to cross the road down and then come back across again. So you have to zigzag across. If you come from the train station, you actually come from this area on the map, which is where the train station path comes out from. You have to cross over the road, cross two side streets, all the way down the hill, then cross back the road again. Grand Central Avenue is a very steep hill. Cars that travel down there come very quickly, and also these left-hand, right-hand turns, cars turn around those corners pretty fast. It's not safe for children or many people walking down that road. So the proposal from the Southern Ward councillors was to reconnect both footpaths, the one from the train station with the one we're building at the reserve, so that we do have people just not crossing the road several times. They can actually walk directly from the train station to the event space. I put the motion as printed.
Before we have a seconder, I invite Mr. Allen to explain why this particular footpath hasn't been on the normal planning for footpaths. I'm asking Mr. Allen to explain. Mr. Allen?
Through the chair, there's an existing footpath on the southern side of Grand Central Avenue. Our policy is to provide one footpath for every street. We have upgraded a second footpath that leads towards transport-orientated stations as well as school sites.
Councillor Crossland, I'm going to come back to you in light of Mr. Allen's answer. And if you wish to move a procedural motion, you may.
I'll move a procedural motion for 10 minutes. So that we can get this item finished today?
Well, the 10 minutes would be appropriate because I know there's a late item coming. So I'm just clarifying your motion.
Yeah, move the motion for 10 minutes.
Councillor Gard, all those in favour? That's carried unanimously, thank you. So did you want to respond to Mr. Allen's answer?
I'll be honest, Your Worship, I'm not quite sure what the answer was, but at the moment this is a thoroughfare from a transport-orientated route.
I think the answer was about there being an existing footpath.
Yeah, I did say that there was a footpath on the other side of the road, but all the ward councillors realised that this actually means crossing a busy steep hill where cars come quite at speed across the bridge with no great vision, crossing two more side streets, and then you're asking people to cross back again to the other side of the road. So you're forcing people to cross that road twice and two side streets when footpath would...
That's the answer to Mr. Allen's answer.
Would solve that issue.
So is that seconded? Councillor Gard, you wish to speak?
Yes, I'm in full agreement with my co-ward councillor on this one. Just to address Mr. Allen's point, I do realise that that is the minimum requirement, one footpath per street, through the chair. But it is not necessarily desirable in each and every street, and in this instance it most certainly isn't. It is a traffic nightmare, and I was only discussing earlier with somebody the fact that in a place like Hallett Cove, Marino is another, where there are supreme views, people stargaze out at the sea and out at wherever, when they're driving, attention is not as good, so the pedestrian is fair game, let alone people pushing prams and on all sorts of mobile equipment. So it is simply a matter of common sense that we get this done. It's a very good investment. It'll even serve for Anzac Day and major events, or it will especially serve on those occasions. So I don't think there should be any hesitation about this at all, Your Worship.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, I'll speak against it just to be in tune with what I've been saying tonight about unbudgeted items being rolled out. Members might remember this project down there was actually put on hold, and was only this council that actually decided to go forward with it. And you know, we're back with the handout again. Look, we have a footpath program, we have a budget. This should be picked up as part of that process. You know, I don't accept the reflection on the South Australian Police about not managing the traffic down there. Don't accept that for one minute. I don't accept that our residents are at risk by walking down a 8-foot path on one side of the road. However, next year I'll put my hand up for it because it makes sense. But you know, we're not practicing what we preach about showing constraint. You know, like we had all the people in yellow here tonight. I won't say the victims, but they are actually people that are part of that constraint. We're indicating to the chief executive to put downward pressure on wages, and he's doing that job. But we have to walk the talk as well. We have to practice what we preach. And if we're really serious about keeping rates low and delivering services, we need to have a disciplined approach to this and not at every meeting having something else jumping up that we weren't expecting. And look, you know, next year you'll have my vote. I promise you that, but not right now.
Speaking for the motion, Councillor Byrum. Anyone else speaking against motion?
Question.
Question from Councillor Telfer, then Councillor.
Would the mover and seconder be prepared for this to be looked at the next review, financial next review, which I think is December?
Councillor Crossan.
I would rather it went today on the basis that this is a safety issue. We have two events coming up. I would rather this was already signed and sealed to be delivered before those major events.
Sufficient answer.
As a suggestion, I'd be happy if you wanted to move an amendment that said $37,000 comes out of next year's footpath budget so that it balances the books as an option.
Well, that financing is a different issue. Councillor Telfer, did you want to go on or not?
All right. I'll move an amendment that Council allocate the $37,000 from the Asset Sustainability Reserve to install blah, 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 and that this is considered at the next quarterly review in December 2017.
I find that inconsistent.
Yeah.
Because if you're allocating, you're allocating.
Sorry. All right. Council, consider at the next quarterly review, December 2017, that $37,000.
Deleted, then that would be in order. Yeah. And in fact, that's—it's only the safety issue that that has saved sort of basketball, BMX, and potentially this one. Anyway, I'll come back to that. Is anyone seconding the motion? The amendment, rather, seconding the amendment that we defer this to a forum at which a variety of proposals are discussed. There's a queue for questions. Let's just hold off on the question of seconders, and I'll ask Councillor Hutchinson, what's your question?
Have the eight residents that adjoin the proposed footpath been consulted? What savings have been potentially identified from the Heron Way Reserve upgrade? And what is the time to construct the footpath?
Councillor Crossland, you're on the first one.
The first one, no. There's been no consultation with the residents, but that is council land and we are entitled to build the footpath there.
Right. Question two would possibly come from savings from Heron Way. Any managers know tonight? Ms. Cladahan?
I'm prepared to withdraw my motion. I have very strong principles about things being looked at in a timely way, but in this instance I'm prepared to withdraw.
I note that the amendment is withdrawn, so question about the Heron Way savings.
Through the Chair, there are no projected savings at this point. We're midway through the construction of Stage 5.
Thank you for that. And Mr. Allen, how long would it take if this was passed tonight?
Through the Chair, if this was passed tonight, we'd be able to have a completed footpath by the end of December.
Councillor.
I'll move an amendment then, Your Worship.
Yes, go ahead.
The amendment is everything that's printed with the addition that...
Point of order, Mr. Mayor.
While that's being written up, there's a point of order from Councillor Hull.
We don't have, as far as I know, allocations towards. We don't have that. I think it's probably against the regulations to have we can actually have
different
rates.
Yes, I understand the point of order. I'll seek Mr. Miff's sort of advice as to whether we can make a notional deduction from a budget line in next year's budget, Mr. Miff.
Through the Chair, you're quite right. There are no ward allocations for any of our budgeting lines. It's a whole-of-city approach always.
No. So I'm ruling that the amendment is out of order, but it is open to being reworded. Yeah, unintended pun. There's a point of order, but unless it's very quick, I'll be closing the meeting. Councillor Hutchinson? No, that's not a point of order. It's not a point of procedure. It's a point of debate. You're really just saying that the advice from management is incorrect. That's a point of debate. Now, Councillor Hutchinson, the call is with you. Do you want to make any procedural motion? Then I declare the meeting closed.